Well, thank you, Mr. Miller, and a very pleasant good morning to all of you. Hope everybody's doing well. Wondering what there is to see down here. Oh, no, I don't. No, didn't see anything in particular there. No, I know sometimes there are glitches, and what the sound crew does is way above my pay grade, so we pay. See? Can you hear me now? I just have to say one thing, and that is there is nothing wrong with liver. Now, I am known a little bit as a picky eater, so it's always surprising to people that I like liver, but I do. So the days of no liver, of course, I don't have a lot of it, but I don't know if you know Mrs. Nicholson. Mr. Smith mentioned Mrs. Nicholson. She fortunately lives about two houses down from us. I say fortunately because sometimes when my wife leaves for a few days to go see one of the children, she has made me liver. And she makes the best. So, kudos to Mrs. Nicholson. Well, brethren, back in the day, there was a hit song by a band named Aerosmith titled Walk This Way. Some of you are chuckling and probably remember that song. It's not a song that I'd necessarily recommend we listen to. It was a generational song from the heyday of rock and roll. You know, our children, when I say our children, I'm specifically talking about my children. You know, my children probably wouldn't like it. I don't know if they've ever listened to it. I know my parents hated it. I didn't even really like it. But it had an interesting title. And I don't know the lyrics to the song. But the title was repeated numerous times throughout the song. Walk This Way. Walk this way. The scriptures indicate that the children of Israel walked to the Red Sea on the last day of unleavened bread at night. Pharaoh's army, which pursued, was destroyed completely. I've got to quit putting my arm over there in my hand, I guess. Pharaoh's army was destroyed completely. I've always thought the logistics of the idea of the children of Israel leaving Egypt, the logistics of that would be interesting. Maybe someday we'll have an opportunity to see the real event. You know, we've seen it on the television screen over the years, maybe at times. I wonder if we could organize this group of what we have, maybe less than 200 people in here. I was thinking as I was preparing this message, if we could organize this group to, say, walk the golf course, 18 holes, what it would take. When you think about what it would take, probably take a lot of effort on the part of the deacons to organize all of us to walk these 18 holes. It would probably, you know, take about, what, for this group, maybe 4 or 6 hours to walk the golf course. 4 to 6 hours, 18 holes. Think about it. Some would need help. Some of us would need help. Some of us couldn't perhaps walk that far. Some of us would need help. Some of us might not be able to walk at all, would need to be carried, would need to be helped in that way. We might get hungry. 4 to 6 hours on a walk, or thirsty. We might need to go. We might, you know, get off the path. I have a couple of young grandsons that would probably have to be corralled a little bit to walk the 18 holes of this golf course. Here we had probably over 2 million people. 2 million. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 37 says there were about 600,000 men on foot. About. That didn't include women and children. Numbers chapter 1, when Moses was instructed to do a census a year later, it said, I think it's about verse 46 or so, says that there were 603,000, I think, 550 men at that time over the age of 20. And that didn't include women and children. So there were over 2 million probably well over 2 million, walking for 7 days through the wilderness and the desert. What a task. What an amazing event that was. What an amazing event to have that many people walking. God delivered the children of Israel. He delivered them. He delivered them from slavery, as we'll see in a little bit. The Ambassador College Correspondence Course, Lesson 34, I have one with me. It is now 53 years old. I think the edition that I have is from 1965. A couple of things I'll read to you with regard to this Exodus that it's stated in here. It says, by sunset Tuesday. Now, there's a chart in here that shows Israel's thrust out of Egypt. There's a chart in here. It shows that the Passover, it says it was in the month of Abib, 1487. Scholars, there's been some debate as to the exact years that some of these things happened. This particular lesson came to the conclusion that it happened, that the children of Israel came out of Egypt in 1487. And the Passover that year, it shows, was on a Wednesday. First day of unleavened bread was on a Thursday. Last day of unleavened bread today would have been the following Wednesday, the 21st day in the month of Abib. It says that by sunset Tuesday, the sixth day of unleavened bread, they had arrived and camped in a cul-de-sac between the mountains and the sea, just as Pharaoh's chariot spearhead legions thundered in behind them. Think about that. There they were, mountains beside them, sea in front of them, Pharaoh's army behind them. Kind of would make us nervous too, I would suppose. It says, then on the daylight part of Wednesday, the seventh and last day of unleavened bread, there was great rejoicing. There was great rejoicing. The lesson goes on to explain how God delivered them from the control of Egypt. He delivered them. Let's go back to the book of Exodus. Pick up a little bit of the story on this, Exodus chapter 12, and we'll read through several scriptures in several chapters. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 40 and 41. I don't think you drank from this, did? No, I'm kidding. It's okay. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 40. says, and it came to pass at the end of 430 years. The end of 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out of the land of Egypt. 430 years, the children of Israel sojourned, as it says. It says the sojourn of Israel, the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt, there in verse 40. It was 430 years. Verse 41, it says, it came to pass at the end of 430 years, he took them out of Egypt. So they sojourned for 430 years. Now, they weren't in slavery for 430 years. It just happened that at the end of 430 years, they were in bondage or they were in slavery. The sojourn began. Go back to Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1 and talk. We really began with Abram or Abram. Mr. Franks mentioned that in his latest member letter that we received yesterday. So this is when their journey began, or rather, their journey or their time of trouble began in Exodus chapter 1. Let's turn back to Exodus chapter 1. They sojourned for 430 years, but in Exodus chapter 1, we can see when their time of trouble began. Verse 8, by way of review, I'm sure most of us have read through this. Verse 8 says, now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Rose a new king in Egypt, and he didn't know Joseph. And in verse 9 it says, and he said to his people, look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and it happen in the event of war, that they also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. That's estimated, things I've heard and read, that they were in slavery of those 430 years, probably about 175 to 200 years. That's a long time. That's a long time to be in bondage or to be in slavery. And God completely delivered them from Pharaoh. It's interesting that God was concerned when they were on their journey that they would want to go back. God was concerned about that he was concerned that they would want to go back. Let's fast forward here a little bit to Exodus chapter 13, or go forward a little bit to Exodus chapter 13 and see that. Exodus chapter 13, God was concerned that they would want to go back to Egypt. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 17. There we go. What can I do to do this better? To not do that. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 17 says, then it came to pass when Pharaoh had left that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. He could have led them a different way that would have been closer, would have been near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. God had concerns that the children of Israel would want to return to Egypt. He had concerns. Sometimes I wonder whether God didn't, in part, probably not, but just a question I ask myself, whether God maybe didn't in part have Pharaoh after them to keep them going. because they wanted to go back. They would, and God was concerned about that. Let's turn to Exodus chapter 14 and verse 10. Exodus chapter 14 and verse 10, we'll see that they wanted, you can see that they wanted to go back. Exodus chapter 14 and verse 10 says, "And Pharaoh drew near, and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord." And in verse 11, it says, "And they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Have you so dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt?" Verse 12, "Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt?" Now, I don't read that anywhere. I think that's a little bit of, today we might call it fake news or revisionist history. A little bit of revisionist history. You know, "Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness.'" The Egyptians were having difficulty. Even, you know, and it's kind of hard for us to fathom. Now, we've seen more of the story here. We've seen more of this story, and we've read it, and we know what God did to get them to this point. Now, they experienced it, but we know what God did to get them to this point. He miraculously brought them out, and yet they were concerned to the point where they wished they were back. Exodus chapter 16. Exodus chapter 16 says, "And they journeyed from Elim," verse 1. Exodus 16 and verse 1. "They journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after they departed from the land of Egypt, and the whole congregation of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness." Now, you know, do we ever complain? Last Monday morning, at our house, there was about 2 inches of snow on the ground on April 2nd. And I don't know if I verbally complained, but I know that I mentally did. But, you know, we can complain about those kind of things, but, you know, it was spectacular, though, wasn't it? Beautiful. The snow was on the trees. I think sometimes we have these sticks growing out of the ground that look kind of drab for the winter, and God can take in a couple of hours and He can paint everything white, and it's beautiful, and it was. But it was cold too, so we still complained. Verse 3 says, "The children of Israel said to them, 'Oh, that we had died at the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger.'" So that they complained and they murmured and they wanted to go back to what? Back to what? It's a habit. I'm sorry. They wanted to go back to what? Let's take a look at that. Upwards of 200 years of difficulty, and in 30 days, they wanted to go back to Egypt. Exodus chapter 1. we can see what they wanted to go back to. Exodus chapter 1. Back to the book of Exodus chapter 1. This time we'll pick it up in verse 13. It says, so the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor. With rigor. Verse 14. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage. They made their lives bitter with hard bondage. In mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field, all their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. Children of Israel wanted to go back to that. They wanted to go back to that. Let me read a little bit about this verse from Adam Clark's commentary, where it says, they made their lives bitter. Adam Clark says, so that they became weary of life through the severity of their servitude. With hard bondage, with grievous servitude, that was the general character of life in Egypt. That's what they wanted to go back to. It was a life of the most painful servitude, oppressive enough in itself, but made much more so by the cruel manner in which their treatment while performing their tasks. In mortar and brick, first in digging clay, kneading and preparing it, and secondly, forming it into bricks, drying them in the sun. Service in the field, carrying those materials to places where they were to be formed into buildings, and serving the builders while employed in those public works. Josephus says the Egyptians contrived a variety of ways to afflict the Israelites, for they enjoined them to cut a great number of channels for the river and to build walls for their cities and ramparts, that they might restrain the river and hinder its waters from stagnating upon the overturning banks. They wanted to go back after 200 years, approximately, of servitude. That is what they wanted to go back to. They wanted to go back to that. The children of Israel, to slavery and bondage. That's what the children of Israel wanted to go back to. It was bitter and it was cruel. You know, slavery exists today. It exists in many countries all over the world. In fact, I've got a couple things I could read for time. I won't. But I've read that for $50 in a plane ticket, you can fly to Haiti and buy a slave. But there are countries where it's prevalent. There are countries in Africa where one in four or five people might be a slave today. There are articles, and you can read that there are as many as 60,000 people in bondage and slavery in the United States of America today. 60,000 people. It exists today. The question I might ask us is, do we ever want to go back to the world? Do we ever want to go back to the world to build a little bit upon what Mr. Smith talked about? We live in that world that enslaves people today. Do we ever want to go back to that? Do we have a desire to go back to the world? We can ask ourselves that question. You know, do we want to go back to our life as it used to be? We all know many people who have, who've been with us, who've come with us, celebrated this day with us, heard these messages with us, who've gone back, who've returned to their former way of life. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 1. Do we ever want to go back to this world? Do we ever want to go back to the life that we used to have, like the Israelites did? They were barely out of Egypt, and they wanted to go back. Now, sometimes, as the saying goes, you know, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. Sometimes it can be more difficult for us to get Egypt out than it was for us to come out of Egypt. And that's why one of the reasons God has us keep these holy days every year, so that we can continue to look for ways to get Egypt out of us. To get, of course, spiritually speaking, to get Egypt out of us. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 1 says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud and passed through the sea." We're to learn lessons from this. We're to learn lessons from reading in Exodus chapters 1 through chapters, the rest of the book, really. We're to learn lessons from the children of Israel, aren't we? We're to learn those lessons. Paul says, "I do not want you to be unaware." I want you to be aware of this. All were baptized into Moses, in the cloud and in the sea. All ate of that same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. They drank from that same spiritual rock. Verse 5 says, "But," this is a very telling statement and one that we need to heed ourselves, "but with most of them, God was not well pleased." God was not well pleased with most of the Israelites. Now, it doesn't say all of them, but it says most of them, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Or the result is, as the contemporary English version says, "So they died and their bodies were scattered all over the desert." Verse 6, "Now these things became our examples." God has given us an example, lessons to learn from this week. And certainly one of the lessons is that we can't go back. We can't go back. The children of Israel wanted to go back, didn't they? Oh, the pots of meat and the bread. They wanted to go back. Verse 6 says, "So these things are written for our example, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted." Verse 7, "And do not become idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose to play." That you can read about that in Exodus chapter 32 and verse 6. You know, that's where the story there of the golden calf, where they collected gold earrings and threw it into the fire, and poof, you know, a calf came out. Kind of a funny story in the Bible, isn't it? Israel was always wanting to go back to the way they did things in Egypt. Do we? Do we want to go back to some of those things, the way they did things in Egypt? Verse 8 says, "Nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them tempted and were destroyed by serpents." Verse 10, "Nor complain." That's a challenge for us. You know, there are some challenging scriptures in the Bible. I try to note those sometimes, you know. Capture every thought. That's a challenge. And this is a challenge. Nor complain, as some of them complained. It's hard sometimes not to complain. Not to murmur, isn't it? And we're destroyed by the destroyer. So here we see that we have lust and idolatry and immorality and complaining. Verse 11, we're to learn from this. All these things, again, Paul says, happened to them as examples. Not necessarily good examples, but happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Contemporary English version said, these things happened to them as a warning to us. Warning to us. Can we, or do we, or can we heed and learn from the warning that we are given and have been given and are being given? Do we heed and can we learn from that? Are we learning the lessons that God wants us to learn? Am I? I have to ask myself that question. What can I learn? What can we learn? To never want to go back. The sun will set tonight. We can go for breadsticks, right? Who wants to go to Olive Garden? We went there one time during the days of unleavened bread, and I thought, why? Why would you want to come to Olive Garden if you couldn't have the breadsticks, right? We can go to McDonald's. We can go to the supermarket for a loaf of bread, although it is still going to be Sabbath at sunset tonight, though. So we can't necessarily make a shopping trip. Once we come out of Egypt, brethren, come out of the bondage of Egypt, the slavery of sin, we can't go back, can we? We can never go back. We can never go back. There's one thing, brethren, that I would like to get across and like us all to learn from this message. It's that we must keep walking away from sin. We heard about that in the first message. We must keep walking away from sin. It never stops. It's a lifelong journey that we must keep walking away from sin. We spent a lot of time before the days of unleavened bread, before the Passover, trying to get all those crumbs out. We've heard about that. One of the areas I struggle with is the little dark hole beside my seat in my car. You can see things. Probably still can. I worked real hard to get in there and get everything I could see, but it just seemed like you can't get to them sometimes. It's just, you really have to work at it to get there. Of course, we've heard about the car seats. We've also spent a lot of time spiritually evaluating, examining, contemplating, removing leaven spiritually. We need to learn the lessons of the children of Israel. We need to learn to never go back. We can never go back. The journey is lifelong. John chapter 8. John chapter 8. Read a couple of scriptures here in John chapter 8. And verse 32. John 8 and verse 32. Christ said here, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The Israelites were freed from bondage. We need to be free from our bondage, from the bondage of sin, don't we? Verse 33 says, they answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free? How many times have we heard that? We live in a free country. We can do what we want to do. You ever hear somebody say those kind of things? We can do what we want to do. I'm free to do what I want to do. We have rampant violence in the city. It's not working out so great in some of our cities. 21.5 million people age 12 and older with substance abuse problems. And probably that's an old statistic, a few years old, probably even more than that. Anywhere from 600,000 to 1.5 million abortions a year in this country. Is that what freedom looks like? Is that what freedom looks like? Verse 34. Jesus answered them and said, "Most assuredly, I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin." Whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. Now, the word here for commit sin has a sense of practice or living in sin as a matter of practice. So it's not someone that just necessarily misses the mark, but it's someone who lives in it, has it on its shelf, as we heard, lives in it as a matter of practice. Do we see, or can we ask ourselves the question, what is our practice? What do we practice? Children of Israel kept the Passover. Then God took them out of Egypt. They wanted to go back, didn't they? They wanted to go back. God was not pleased with most of them. We kept the Passover. Spiritually, God brought us out of Egypt. We don't want to go back, do we? We don't want to go back, do we? We don't want to go back to Egypt spiritually. We want to walk this way, don't we? We want to walk this way, not this way, not backwards. We don't want to go back to that. We want to walk forward, don't we? We don't want to go back to Egypt. Let's consider a couple of do's and don'ts. I'll go through these rather quickly for time's sake. A couple of do's and don'ts. Number one, don't look back. Don't look back. Sometimes, you know, as again we heard in the first message, we want to do that, don't we? We want to kind of take a sneak peek at what's out there. Take a peek at the tree. Don't look back. Remember what God said in Exodus chapter 13 and verse 17, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. Sometimes, brethren, we can see pots of meat and bread and want to go back. I'll just give you as a reference Luke chapter 9 and verse 62. You can read that at some other time. Number two, so don't look back. Do go forward. Do go forward. We need to go forward with what we've learned. We need to not look back to March, 29th or 30th, the day before the Passover. We need to go forward from there and not look back. What did God say? The Lord will fight for you. You shall hold your peace. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 14. Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Number three, don't let others unduly influence you. Don't let others unduly influence you. You know, we're around things all the time, aren't we? Language, jokes, habits, practices. We're in those things and around them all the time. Don't let others unduly influence you. And then number four, do walk this way. Started the message out by talking about walking this way. Do walk this way. Do walk in this way. Influence others in the right way to walk. Don't laugh at their dirty jokes. They will notice. Don't use foul language. They will notice. There are numerous things that we could say, do this, they will notice. Let's close with a millennial scripture in Isaiah chapter 30. Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 20. Isaiah 30 and verse 20. It's a scripture that we often read at the Feast of Tabernacles. Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 20 says, "And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore, but your eyes will see your teachers." Now, we sometimes think this is going to be kind of fun for us because we're going to sit in the back of our kids' cars and we're going to see everything they do. But it's more talking about teaching them, teaching our children. Verse 21 says, "Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, 'This is the way, walk you in it.'" This is the way, walk you in it, whenever you turn to the right or whenever you turn to the left. God took the children of Israel out of Egypt. They wanted to go back. God is taking us out of Egypt spiritually. Do we want to go back? Do we want to go back? Spring festivals will come to an end at sunset this evening. You know, we look forward to them all winter long. We have learned a lot this festival season, haven't we? We can go back 6 or 8 weeks and maybe review our notes and look at the messages and that we have heard. We've learned a lot. Spring festivals will be over at sunset. Let's keep walking.